The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Part 4, The Yoga of Self-Perfection, Chapter 16, The Divine Shakti, page 752. The relation between the Purusha and Prakriti, which emerges as one advances in the Yoga of Self-Perfection, is the next thing that we have to understand carefully in this part of the yoga. In the spiritual truth of our being, the power which we call nature is the power of being, consciousness, and will, and therefore the power of self-expression and self-creation of the self, soul, or Purusha. But to our ordinary mind in the ignorance and to its experience of things, the force of Prakriti has a different appearance. When we look at it in its universal action outside ourselves, we see it first as a mechanical energy in the cosmos, which acts upon matter or in its own created forms of matter. In matter, it evolves powers and processes of life. When we look at it in its universal action outside ourselves, we see it first as a mechanical energy in the cosmos, which acts upon matter or in its own created forms of matter. In matter, it evolves powers and processes of life, and in living matter, powers and processes of mind. Throughout its operations, it acts by fixed laws, and in each kind of created thing, displays varying properties of energy and laws of process, which give its character to the genus or species, and again in the individual develops without infringing the law of the kind minor characteristics and variations of a considerable consequence. It is this mechanical appearance of Prakriti which has preoccupied the modern scientific mind and made for it its whole view of nature, and so much so that science still hopes and labors with a very small amount of success to explain all phenomena of life by laws of matter, and all phenomena of mind by laws of living matter. Here, soul or spirit has no place, and nature cannot be regarded as power of spirit. Since the whole of our existence is mechanical, physical, and bounded by the biological phenomenon of a brief living consciousness, and man is a creature and instrument of material energy, the spiritual self-evolution of yoga can be only a delusion, hallucination, abnormal state of mind, or self-hypnosis. In any case, it cannot be what it represents itself to be, a discovery of the eternal truth of our being and a passing above the limited truth of the mental, vital, and physical to the full truth of our spiritual nature. But when we look, not at external mechanical nature to the exclusion of our personality, but at the inner subjective experience of man, the mental being, our nature takes to us a quite different appearance. We may believe intellectually, in a purely mechanical view, even of our subjective existence, but we cannot act upon it or make it quite real to our self-experience. For we are conscious of an I, which does not seem identical with our nature, but capable of standing back from it, of a detached observation and criticism and creative use of it, and of a will which we naturally think of as a free will. And even if this be a delusion, we are still obliged, in practice, to act as if we were responsible mental beings capable of a free choice of our actions, able to use or misuse, and to turn to higher or lower ends are nature. And even we seem to be struggling both with our environmental and with our own present nature, and striving to get mastery over a world which imposes itself on and masters us, and at the same time to become something more than we now are. But the difficulty is that we are only in command, if at all, over a small part of ourselves. The rest is subconscient or subliminal and beyond our control. Our will acts only in a small selection of our activities. The most is a process of mechanism and habit, and we must strive constantly with ourselves and surrounding circumstances to make the least advance or self-amelioration. There seems to be a dual being in us, soul and nature. Purusha and Prakriti seem to be half in agreement, half at odds, nature laying its mechanical control on the soul attempting to change and master nature. And the question is, what is the fundamental character of this duality, and what the issue? The Sankhya explanation is that our present existence is governed by a dual principle. Prakriti is inert without the contact of Purusha, acts only by a junction with it, and then, too, by the fixed mechanism of her instruments and qualities. Purusha, passive and free apart from Prakriti, becomes by contact with her and sanctioned to her works subject to this mechanism, lives in her limitation of ego sense, and must get free by withdrawing the sanction and returning to its own proper principle. Another explanation that tallies with a certain part of our experience is that there is a dual being in us, the animal and material, or more widely, the lower nature bound, and the soul or spiritual being entangled by mind in the material existence or in world nature. And freedom comes by escape from the entanglement, the soul returning to its native planes, or the self or spirit to its pure existence. The perfection of the soul, then, is to be found not at all in but beyond nature. But in a higher than our present mental consciousness, we find that this duality is only a phenomenal appearance. The highest and real truth of existence is the one spirit, the supreme soul, Purushottama, and it is the power of being of this spirit which manifests itself in all that we experience as universe. This universal nature is not a lifeless, inert, or unconscious mechanism, but informed in all its movements by the universal spirit. The mechanism of its process is only an outward appearance, and the reality is the spirit, creating or manifesting its own being by its own power of being in all that is in nature. Soul and nature in us, too, are only a dual appearance of the one existence. The universal energy acts in us, but the soul limits itself by the ego sense, lives in a partial and separate experience of her workings, uses only a modicum and a fixed action of her energy for its self-expression. It seems rather to be mastered and used by this energy than to use it, because it identifies itself with the ego sense, which is part of the natural instrumentation and lives in the ego experience. The ego is, in fact, driven by the mechanism of nature of which it is a part, and the ego will is not and cannot be a free will. To arrive at freedom, mastery, and perfection, we have to get back to the real self and soul within, and arrive too, thereby, at our true relations with our own and with universal nature. In our active being, this translates itself into a replacement of our egoistic, our personal, our separately individual will and energy by a universal and a divine will and energy, which determines our action in harmony with the universal action and reveals itself as the direct will and the all-guiding power of the Purushottama. We replace the inferior action of the limited, ignorant, and imperfect personal will and energy in us by the action of the divine Shakti. To open ourselves to the universal energy is always possible to us, because that is all around us and always flowing into us. It is that which supports and supplies all our inner and outer action, and in fact, we have no power of our own in any separately individual sense, but only a personal formulation of the one Shakti. And on the other hand, this universal Shakti is within ourselves, concentrated in us, for the whole power of it is present in each individual as in the universe. And there are means and processes by which we can awaken its greater and potentially infinite force and liberate it to its larger workings. We can become aware of the existence and presence of the universal Shakti in the various forms of her power. At present, we are conscious only of the power as formulated in our physical mind, nervous being, and corporeal case, sustaining our various activities. But if we can once get beyond this first formation, by some liberation of the hidden, recondite, subliminal parts of our existence by yoga, we become aware of a greater life force, a pranic Shakti, which supports and fills the body and supplies all the physical and vital activities. For the physical energy is only a modified form of this force, and supplies and sustains too, from below, all our mental action. This force we feel in ourselves also, but we can feel it too around us and above, one with the same energy in us, and can draw it in and down to aggrandize our normal action, or call upon and get it to pour into us. It is an illimitable ocean of Shakti, and will pour as much of itself as we can hold into our being. This pranic force we can use for any of the activities of life, body or mind, with a far greater and effective power than any that we command in our present operations, limited as they are by the physical formula. The use of this pranic power liberates us from that limitation to the extent of our ability to use it in place of the body-bound energy. It can be used so to direct the prana, as to manage more powerfully, or to rectify any bodily state or action, as to heal illness, or to get rid of fatigue, and to liberate an enormous amount of mental exertion and play of will or knowledge. The exercises of pranayama are the familiar mechanical means of freeing and getting control of the pranic energy. They heighten too and set free the psychic, mental, and spiritual energies which ordinarily depend for their opportunity of action on the pranic force. But the same thing can be done by mental will and practice, or by an increasing opening of ourselves to a higher spiritual power of the Shakti. The pranic Shakti can be directed not only upon ourselves, but effectively towards others, or on things, or happenings for whatever purposes the will dictates. Its effectivity is immense, in itself illimitable, and limited only by defect of the power, purity, and universality of the spiritual or other will which is brought to bear upon it. But still, however great and powerful, it is a lower formulation, a link between the mind and body, an instrumental force. There is a consciousness in it, a presence of the spirit, of which we are aware, but it is encased, involved in, and preoccupied with the urge to action. It is not to this action of the Shakti that we can leave the whole burden of our activities. We have either to use its lendings by our own enlightened personal will, or else call in a higher guidance. For of itself, it will act with a greater force, but still according to our imperfect nature, and mainly by the drive and direction of the life power in us, and not according to the law of the highest spiritual existence. Pausing here, mid-page 756, to be continued in the next reading.